Yes, we're talking with Dr. John DeSalvo, the lost ark of Enochian magic. We're going to take your phone calls this hour as well. Does it indeed open up portals to the angelic realm? Perhaps. Strange story out of St. Louis, by the way. An emergency medical technician person is called to a mall. A man has collapsed, probably a heart attack. She's beginning to administer CPR to the individual. She collapses and has a heart attack. The guy dies that she was working on. She's in critical condition. Man, when it's your time, it's your time. We'll be back with John DeSalvo in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. John DeSalvo. John, by the way, where do you get your books, The Lost Ark of Enochian Magic, Decoding the Enochian Secrets?
They're on Amazon.com. It's probably the best price to get them is from Amazon.com.
They've got it all, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. And if you're a Prime member, you get the free shipping. So it's great. So I know you can also get them from the publisher. You probably get them from, the bookstores. But, wherever you like to get them. I still like going to bookstores, George.
You mean there are bookstores?
Yeah. I have two books with Barnes & Noble. I just love their store, and I just hope they stay in business forever because and I love old bookstores, antiquarian bookstores, being a collector. So I hope that's not going to be a thing of the past in a few years, you know?
I like those stores, those old bookstores that have that old musty smell to it. It just has that old flavor, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. My son keeps telling me, get a Kindle, and I know I'm going to get one. But there's nothing like holding the book, especially like a 17th century, 16th century book with the smell, like you said, and the pages as you turn them, they just have that sound. I don't know.
Put a little bookmarker in there.
Oh, just amazing.
It's like
record players, a tape decks. Those are things of the past, and we move ahead. But still, books to me are something precious.
Well, sometimes technology goes a little too far, don't you think?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, there's certain advantages to it, and there's certain disadvantages, and I think we need to balance that more. Like in anything,
yep.
There's always good and bad, and almost people always say to me, "Is this evil? Are computers evil?" I said, "No, nothing's bad or good. It's how you use it. If things are neutral. They're objects. You can use it for good or for evil. That's our choice."
It's like a gun.
Exactly. Anything. Nuclear energy. You can use it for sources of energy. I'm thinking all this concerns about nuclear energy. Maybe that's going to save our planet. Maybe if we have an asteroid that's headed to our planet, a rocket ship with a nuclear device is going to deflect it or destroy it. So, we never know the potential of a device. It's infinitely good and probably infinitely bad ways to use it.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. I wanted to give you my theory on how they built the pyramids. I think your guest said there were a million stones in the Great Pyramid, and I think that if there was a million stones, and that would give them 5 minutes to lay each stone, and it would take about 80 to 100 years. And I'm wondering if they started the pyramid when the Pharaoh was born. Maybe the Great Pyramid is the pyramid for the Pharaoh that lived the longest.
Well, also, though, don't forget, they had to get those blocks. They had to dig them out. They had to bring them in. I mean, those could have taken forever.
Well, I think if you take a pyramid, you can make it bigger by just building on three sides. So maybe they just continuously just built it on three sides. And they could do that with a lot of sand, just pull the sand up against the side and put long plank, make wooden, like plywood roads up to just each level as it goes, build it on each three sides.
It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. The problem is, again, to make those things, to build it, is almost as much technology as building the pyramid, and I don't know structurally if that would work, but it's a very, there's been a lot of different, proposals, and that's a very interesting one also.
I want to know how they cut the blocks out and lifted them out.
Yeah, and you know, in so many other mysteries, like the cement that was used to glue the blocks is stronger than the blocks themselves, and it's an unknown mixture. I mean, there's so many mysteries about it. So, yeah, and I think it's good, I think it was Jeff, you think about these things because somebody can maybe come up with the right explanation, and I think we need to be creative, and that's a very good possibility.
Jeff, what do you think of the poured theory, that those blocks were just like poured like concrete?
No, I don't think they. I think they cut them from far away, and they transported them on rollers. If they had 20,000 or 30,000 slaves doing that, you know, over 80 years, because it wasn't. You know, the cathedrals in the Middle Ages, it took them 80 to 100 years to build some of those cathedrals. And if they built up the sand up the sides of the pyramid, and the pharaoh died, then they could just take that sand and get it out of there in a matter of days, and building up on three sides, the pharaoh would always be a tomb in there, and then a tomb ready to put the pharaoh in, and then they would only have to complete three sides, one level on three sides vertically up, and then you're ready for the next pharaoh.
It's interesting theory. I know if I was a slave working for a pharaoh and he died, I'd try to get out of there, John. How about you?
Yeah, you know, the interesting you mentioned about the pouring hypothesis. It's interesting. The only thing is, I think, as far as I could tell, most of the blocks are pneumolytic limestone, which are like fossil based. So it wouldn't be poured. It would have to be, you know, of a rock origin. But it's possible there's certain sections that could have been poured. So, you know, in the theories that I work with, I always say you never be exclusive. It could be a combination of many possibilities. So. And sometimes that's what solves the problem, is that there's not just one simple explanation, but a combination of many ideas. And I think, you know, we need to keep thinking and need to be proposing and then trying experimentally to see what works.
Okay, let's go to Palos Verdes, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, George. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
You continually amaze me with you outdo yourself almost every night. It's amazing. But anyway, along the lines, I called about a month ago, and along the archaeological lines, I live at the south part of L.A. County, and there's just been revealed, I think it's been known for a while, because there were archaeological digs going back in the 20s, and there's a tight-lipped archaeological community that's, you know, not saying anything, but there's been revealed just amazing cliff hieroglyphics, just carvings, art, you know, symbols, letters, and it's just, with the erosion the last couple of years, it's just completely visible, and it's elaborate, it's massive, and it speaks history. And then just this last year, for some reason, the seafloor, the reef started pulling off the bottom, and it was washing in, I mean, giant chunks of reef, and it revealed the same type of art and symbols and hieroglyphics that match the cliffs, and it is just, and you see floor, you can see it looks like, you know, flooring or streets. I mean, it's really visible, especially with, you know, a good pair of binoculars, and from a distance, it's easier to see. But I mean, it's Atlantis, it's Stonehenge, and it's Easter Island rolled into one, you know, microcosm. But it is really revealing, and I don't know how far back it dates, but it's just absolutely mind-boggling.
You know, could you email me and send me any information you have about this? It sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, I know it's not. It's something that's known, but for some reason the cliffs have eroded the last 5 years. It is so visible, and it's just it's breathtaking. I'm just blown. I have a hard time leaving there to do anything else.
Well, this sounds like something I'd be very interested in. You know, if you just go to my website GizaPyramid.com and email the director, I would love to, if you can, you know, any information, links, whatever. I would love to look into that.
Yeah, sure. I don't know where you're based out of or anything, but I'd be more than happy to take someone on a tour that was interested, and I could just kind of.
Well, great! I look forward to hearing from you. See, that's what I love about the show, George. You get information that you haven't heard about from before, and it sometimes opens new research areas.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, when Linda Moulton Howe comes on the program, I can't tell you how many times, John, she gets inside information from people who are listening to the program who then send her emails.
It is amazing. And like I said, I would never probably have developed my friendship with Betty and Becky if it wasn't for being on your show when a listener wrote in and told me. So you're exactly right. It's just amazing.
Tell me about these portals that somehow are created, opened up with Enochian magic, with meditation. Do you think that they're natural occurrences? They're part of the universe. They were always there.
Yes, I really do, and I think it's like a thing of perspective. We just don't see it because we don't have that ability, that sensory ability that's opened, and that's what the magic does. It allows us to see this. So, you see, that's to me why I think the Enochian magic or Enochian meditation is so important, because it gives us a real experience of the spiritual world. You know, I mentioned, you know, people are tired of sermons and talks and discussions and dissertations about the spiritual life. That's why so many people leave churches, and then they even get tired of the New Age stuff because they don't get results. It's like, you know, people want to experience God and experience the spiritual. And when you enter these portals or spiritual realms, it does alter your consciousness. It does put you in a new reality and allows contact with, like I mentioned, angels or spiritual beings. And it's like now you say, now I know this exists. Now I know there's a higher realm, that it's not just the physical world. And knowing is a lot different than reading about it or somebody telling you about it. And so, you know, the other thing is many times people challenge me, and I always like to be, because I'm a skeptic. We all should be skeptic. You should not just accept something on somebody else's word. You need to test it and analyze it. But, you know, how do we know, again, a lot of these are not of our imagination or subconscious, or we're making it up. I mean, even with good intentions, we don't realize it. And that's sometimes the information you get. And when I go into these altered states or these ethers and I communicate with angels, they have helped me solve problems with the Dr. John Dee cryptology and the Book of Enoch, things that I believe I would not have been able to solve. Now, somebody could say, well, you know, it was in your subconscious and it just came together. And that's possible. But when I get solutions to things from the angels that I feel I would not have been able to solve myself, that starts to tell me that there is a reality to this. It's not just within our mind. And there's certain people that have explored, by the way, these different dimensions. You know, Aleister Crowley was one of those individuals, a very controversial figure, you know, really, in my opinion, did bizarre and crazy things that, you know, I wouldn't want to do. But right. The one thing was, he was a gifted magician. He actually went to all 30 of these realms and wrote a book on it. And I remember when I first started experimenting with these realms and going through them, and I have not reached all of them by far, but as I started, and you can only kind of go to where your spiritual development is. So you finally sometimes may get to a point and not be able to go further. I remember when I started doing this, Lon Milo Duquette told me, don't read his work until you experiment with this first, so you don't be tainted by what he did, that you experience it yourself. And after I went through the different realms, and I read what he experienced, there was a lot of similarities which told me this was a real world. It was a reality that existed independently of our minds. Because if different, and not only him, others, different people go into a different realm and experience the same thing or similar things, you start to say, well, maybe there is a reality of its own. I thought that was fascinating. And Crowley started with the 30th Aether and 29th in like 1900, and then he couldn't go any further, he felt. He had to wait 9 years, and that happened to me. I only got to those two, and I remember Lon pushing me on, saying, just keep going. And then some, like the 22nd, we've had very similar experiences, and there's others. So I'm not, you know, basically that it convinces me there is a reality to this. It's not just, again, subjective.
Okay, let's go to Beaumont, Texas. Sarah, it's your turn east of the Rockies. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi. Hi. I have a question and a comment.
Okay.
My question is, if anybody if this gentleman has ever heard of FEMA being involved with a cover-up with UFOs.
With who? I'm sorry?
FEMA.
FEMA being involved with a cover-up.
No, I have not. I've heard of cover-ups, but I haven't heard FEMA involved.
Right. Well, you know, Jesse Ventura had a special, and I just couldn't believe the footage until I saw it myself in my own town. There was a plot of land, and it clearly states FEMA detention.
What has that got to do with UFOs?
Well, the crazy part is I called a local newspaper reporter. I did not call this particular place, and we discussed all this, and FEMA told him it was for a bomb shelter, you know, for people to hide in.
I know. I don't know if you heard my question, though. What is the FEMA camps have to do with the UFO?
That's what I'm getting to. As soon as I hung up with him, this particular man from that company, which is connected with the governor of Texas, because you can look it up in the telephone book, and he called me, and I thought, what in the world is, you know, is the phone being tapped? And he asked me, did I call him? And I said, no, sir, I didn't, but while I've got you on the phone, I have a question. What in the world are y'all doing out there? He said, oh, we're building a water drainage thing. I said, that's not a flood zone, and you don't put pipe, you know, the things above ground.
Sarah, I got to ask you one more time because I'm running out of time.
Well, he told me that they put he helped carry two aliens in there in a space in one of their ships.
Well, who said that?
The gentleman that worked for that company, and he said he had a NASA shirt on, and then he said, oh, my God, I think I've said too much, and he slammed the phone down.
And off he went. Well, I've not heard of this one, John. I've heard of weird things, but not
that. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one either. Interesting.
No, not at all. Almost out of time, by the way. We'll come back and take some final calls. John, what's your next work? You're going to talk more about Native American spirituality? Is that what you're going to work on?
Well, that's more for my own spiritual development. I don't have any plans on, you know, like writing a book on it or doing anything significant. It's just for my personal development. I shouldn't bring this up. I've been bringing up so many different things tonight. But one area I've been researching for the last year or two is aura glasses. I don't know if you remember, ever heard of those, aura glasses or aura goggles. They were developed in like the early 1900s by a doctor and radiologist, Dr. Walter Kilner. And they were supposedly, he was, again, a radiologist that believed that humans did have this aura, you know, the auras that clairvoyants could see. And he thought, if these auras really exist, can't we develop a certain specific lens that anybody could put on and see their auras? So he spent years developing a certain kind of dye known as dicyanin, which when he coated certain lenses and kept them, it was a really complicated and expensive process. He claimed that this allowed one to see auras. And there were limited number of these that were made by back in the 1930s and 40s. And I actually got an original set of those glasses, and I've been experimenting and trying to determine if indeed they do allow people to see the aura and what could be the physiological mechanisms. And that, actually, I was working on that with Joe Parr before he passed away.
That would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm working with several individuals who've actually tried to resynthesize the dye and the lenses, and it's fascinating. I actually can see my aura with them, and what's so interesting about it is the more you use them, when you take them off, you can still see the aura
really?
At a certain time. Yeah,
that's fascinating.
One of my friends who's been experimenting with this can see the aura for hours after he takes the glasses off.
John, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, after we scare the heck out of you, we will have our Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. And when we come back in this very fast night, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. John DeSalvo on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Dr. John DeSalvo. We'll take your phone calls as well. These angels, John, what have you concluded about them? What they are, what their mission might be?
Very good question. I don't have the answer to that, except my interactions with them show me that they are, you know, loving, good, holy, and they're here to help us in terms of getting closer to God and carrying out our spiritual search, because that to me is the purpose of doing this Enochian meditation. It's a path to God, a path to our inner self. And the angels have, as I mentioned, a kind of a flavor or an attribute. For example, one of them sometimes gives me the feeling of time. So when I kind of move close to that angel, I sometimes say, can you I'd like to go back in time and glimpse some things of my past better. And actually, that sometimes happens. I'll almost get a vision of a past experience, almost like I'm there. Other angels may give me a feeling of the universe. I ask them for maybe some secrets or information about the universe or its makeup. And so, you know, they seem to have different flavors, even at different times, different attributes. So that's why it's so exciting. It's like you mentioned, it's like, uncharted territories in this. But it's always a feeling of goodness and of help. And maybe like they are messengers or entities that help us on our path towards God. Now, that's my experience. And like I said, I have done this technique hundreds of times and always had good results with it. And I know one thing that has been very influential in my life and very helpful in my spiritual search.
There's no question that we have lost knowledge, John, over the years. I just don't know why or how.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, because I always say that our brain, you know, people say we don't know what percent we use, but they say we only use about 10%. But we know there's definitely areas of the brain that we don't use. We don't know what their purpose is. And I feel that nothing's wasted in the human body, because things are really done efficiently in nature. So all these areas that we don't know what they do, maybe are receptors or, you know, like I said, to open the portal to these higher realms. And maybe it's just disuse. You know, early man had this communications with God and the angels, and through who knows what, they lose it, they forget it. And now it's dormant, but it's still there. We still get it when we're born, and just we need to open it up. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think there's so many things that maybe we have the capacity and ability to do that we haven't even scratched the surface.
Okay, to the phones we go. We'll go to Suffolk, Virginia. Sheila, first-time caller. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, George. Hi, John.
Hi, Sheila.
Okay, John, I was definitely abducted, but everything is hindsight. After the abduction, I completely lost my mind. I was labeled as being bipolar and certain aspects of schizophrenia. On heavy medication for 2 years, I got better, and I began to piece things together. I'm still losing something, but I was targeted. And over, I would say, about 10 or 11 years, I was just targeted. It was all hindsight. But I'm piecing it together now, and it's horrible. It ruined my life. But I went outside to hang clothes one morning, mm-hmm. and I left the two small kids in the house, but I could see them through the storm door. And I remember sitting the basket down, and that's all I remember. Hindsight.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're doing better. I'm so happy to hear that, because that must have been a traumatic experience. Did you ever get any implants?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Everything is hindsight. It had steps to it. I have it in the middle finger on my left hand, mm-hmm. and I just pick at it, and when I almost get to it, it'll just draw back.
Yeah, they move.
Yeah, that's Becky had that experience also. How far did they move? Are they pretty much located in the finger? Do they move to different parts of the body?
And everything is hindsight. I'm just so eager to tell somebody.
Well, you're doing it.
I know I don't have much time. In 2010, I had to have gallbladder surgery, mm-hmm. and I never heard of an angel. I never heard of a tall, blonde, blue-eyed angel. I had never heard of it. Everything is hindsight. My surgeon, tall, blonde, blue-eyed. I postponed my surgery 3 times. I never heard of an angel, mind you. Mm-hmm. I postponed it 3 times because I'm saying it's not his height. He was 7 and change. It's not his height. It's something weird about this guy, and do I want him to do this surgery? But I had to have it, and eventually I went on with it. All of my stuff is just hindsight, but it's horrible. It happened. They brought me back because I guess I was such a fighter, because I was such a loving mother, and I would never leave those kids in the house. But I remember sitting at the kitchen table. I don't know how long I was gone. I don't know what I did for the rest of the day because the children were small. They couldn't talk. I was crying as if I had seen the devil himself. And I'm saying, why were you crying? So some of my friends will say, did you ever hang the clothes? I said, what clothes? My memory was just wiped away. I had no, it was gone. But piece by piece, I'm putting it all together. And
you know, that's not unusual for, you know, memories to be wiped out of abductees and, you know.
I mean, even in Betty's case, Andreasen, didn't they try to blot it out of her for a while?
I think so. And also, there's a lot of horrible experiences that people reported with abductions, and it's taken them a while to kind of to deal with that. So I'm very happy this lady is getting back to normal and overcoming that, because it probably was a very shock and traumatic experience.
Of course, what is normal these days, John? You know?
Yeah, I know. That's a good point.
Cheyenne, Wyoming. Zach, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Zach, go ahead.
Hi, John. Hey, George. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Hi, Jack.
I just had a couple of questions. I read on various different people, Carlos Castaneda, Lepus Levi, Oteo and Crowley, and even DeQuette. What I wanted to know is, with America today on prescription drugs like Xanax and Valium and stuff like that, schizophrenia medication, does that affect the Enochian meditation in any way?
Oh, there's no question, John. If you're under the influence of some drug, that does affect it, doesn't it?
Oh, sure. That's why I recommend, if you're under a prescription medication, obviously you want to continue it and you don't want to stop that. But
what if it's mind altering? I'm not talking about a blood pressure pill or a cholesterol pill. What if?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, see, I don't believe, you know, drugs like that are a way to open up the spiritual realm. I think it's just the opposite.
They hold you back, don't they?
They definitely do. I mean, all great spiritual teachers and saints and religious leaders have said that, the visionaries. It almost gives you like an opposite view of reality. So, no, I thought he was meaning just prescription drugs. Obviously, you want to continue on whatever medication your doctor tells you to, but anything mind altering, any kind, and alcohol, even alcohol, I don't recommend taking any of these when you do any of the meditations or magic, because it's going to affect it, and it's to me a detriment.
Don't shamans even tell you, John, not even to eat before you go into a meditated state?
Oh, yes. I mean, they fast many times, like before the vision quest for 3 days, and very, very strong to purify your body. Almost, you know, all the mystics through time have done this. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s with the big drug culture, and everyone thought, oh, this is a way to open up the higher realms. But again, when you look back at it and people now see, it's not. You're seeing a false reality. It's just something that actually, like you said, may bring you even further away, and you have to overcome this to get back on the path. So definitely, in my opinion, you know, drugs, alcohol, anything like that is not to be used, is not an advantage. And like I said, if you're on prescription medication, that's a different story.
You wrote a book about the Dead Sea Scrolls, didn't you?
A while ago, yes, Barnes & Noble, correct.
Yeah. Was that one of your first?
No, that was an early one. That was after Decoding the Pyramids. Decoding the Pyramids was one of the first ones that the Barnes & Noble published, and then they wanted to do a popular book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. The story's really funny about that. My literary agent who arranged this said, we'd like you to do a book on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I said, well, I'm no expert on it. I mean, I taught a little bit about it when I was in college, but you need, you know, one of the experts. And they said, no, we need a...
You are the expert.
Well, I don't know. They said, we want somebody who can write it for, you know, a good popular book, really highly illustrated. So I said, all right. And basically, I said, how long do I have? I thought he was going to give me, you know, a year or 6 months. And basically, he gave me 2 months to write the book from scratch, and I actually got it done. So it was the fastest day and night project I ever did in my life.
Aren't there some scrolls that were never revealed to us?
Uh, No, not as, I mean, there's some that still maybe haven't been translated or published. There was a big controversy initially, you know, when they found the scrolls and they weren't releasing some, but it's pretty much most of the scrolls are known. You can get them on CD. I find what fascinating, George, is the Copper Scroll, because that lists places of buried treasure in the Palestine area. And that's the only scroll that's not, you know, made of papyrus. It's copper. And it also, there's some strange symbols on it. Not symbols, like Greek letters that nobody knows. I think they're magical indications. But it's almost like a national treasure story that they also claim there's another copper scroll buried. And if you find that one, it would tell you where the treasure is. So I find that the most interesting aspect of the Dead Sea Scrolls is these copper scrolls that were found with and it's interesting. It tells you, go to this area by the rock or well, dig down 20 feet, and that's where you'll find this type of treasure. So there's specific areas, but nobody's ever actually been able to locate those locations and actually find any treasure. So that's a great mystery with the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay, back we go. Let's go to Carrie in Corning, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, George and John, and my nickname is actually Paul, so Ringo's got to be out there getting ready to not dip a feet, first off, I want to say, guys, good show, and also hello to Sue in Chico. She was on the last program before this one came on. She's blind, and she's a very spiritual lady, and so with my nickname, Paul from Villa Sierra, hello, Sue, and we're praying for you and shielding you. There's a thing that goes where a man and the devil, his companion, they were walking down the street one day, and up ahead they saw something in the middle of the road. The devil's companion walked forward, looked a little closer, and there was another man way up ahead where that little piece of something was sitting there on the ground. He picked it up, he put it into his pocket, and he walked off. Seemingly happy. Well, then the devil's companion asked the devil, well, what was that man just picked up and put into his pocket? And the devil said, he just picked up a piece of the truth. And then the devil's companion looked up at him and said, well, isn't that rather bad business for you? And the devil, smiling confidently, said, nah, I'm going to let him organize it.
I'm going to already run the party.
I'm going to let him organize it. So my question to you now, that's not that I don't mean to be, you know, harsh on any one particular religion or another, but it seems like whenever, you know, humanity tries to organize itself in one thing or another, it's almost like looking at an infinitely large diamond. And on one part of the world, we see one facet of that diamond. On another part, we see another facet. We draw our conclusions from the particular sheen and color of that facet. And then we go to war with one another here on this little ball we call Earth, a pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan would put it. And we're killing each other and everything else for all of these differences in the infinite diamond, so, so multifaceted. And it's really bizarre, because that's how large God is and how small our, you know, our finite minds are. And I think if we were able to respect that, it'd be cool. So my question anyway is...
Well, I like that. I like that analogy and agree with you. We really have more commonality, one God, one spirituality. We put these barriers up by looking at different aspects of the diamond. That's a beautiful analogy.
Thank
I agree.
You, John. Thank you. And it's difficult because, you know, we're looking through, like even the Apostle Paul said, we're looking through a very dark lens. So not everything is revealed as it is, or as William Blake, the poet and painter, said that if man had the doors of perception cleansed, we would see everything as it is. And that is divine, quote unquote.
True.
But so here's my question. Can we, as Pellegrini, the magician, or dark arts, white arts, I'm not quite sure, can we shield ourselves from basically psychic attack? Because I've been going through a lot of things with friends that I thought were friends, and they're not exactly friends. And, I'm a little disturbed about it and angry, and thank God for George Noreen Coast to Coast so I can talk and ramble on and get all this out. You guys are really good therapy for me. And so how do we go about this when an injustice is being done and you don't know how to go about it, but you know that it's being done through attitudes, which has a magical component as it rises, winds of waves and light and so forth. How do you go about shielding yourself without necessarily having to return that karma or any other way of losing your own spirituality in the process?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually something I wanted to talk about. And, you know, we've covered so many topics, I didn't get to that. In the book, and I'm not the only one to advocate this, but anytime you do any of these types of magical procedures, I even recommend this to my ghost hunting friends because they're exposing themselves to entities, is you do a certain type of protection, which is known. The one I think is the best and most effective from my experience is the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. It only takes a couple minutes to do.
How does that work?
You're setting up a circle using the names of God and the angels. It takes probably less than a minute to do. You recite the names of, you make like pentagrams at each of the four corners, and you're like putting a circle of white light around you, and then you summon the four archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel, to protect you. Now, this ritual is so old, George, nobody even knows where it comes from, but it works. I've tried everything. When I do this protection, this banishing ritual, it like closes everything off, and it blocks all negative and unwanted energies. If you just did that and even didn't do the Enochian meditation, you get something out of it because it quiets everything down. Now, again, I can't guarantee it's going to work for everybody and everything, but I've tried white light visualizations. I've tried all kinds of techniques, but the lesser banishing ritual works. And actually, no magician usually opens and closes their magical techniques without using it. So it's been, you know, known for centuries and longer than centuries. And that's something I may want to recommend to you. Sometimes if I feel like I want to go to bed at night, and I got like too much chatter in my head and things are hitting me, I'll just do that, and everything will quiet down, and I'll go right to sleep. So maybe that's a suggestion. Try to, you don't have to even get that from my book. You could probably even find it on the internet, you know. And it's a real common thing. Most books have it.
Well, the name of the work, "The Lost Art of Enochian Magic" by Dr. John DeSalvo. John, thanks. We'll get you back on again. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.